Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us on the program today. My guest this week, speaking to us by phone from his office, is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, pinch hitting today for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, who is a little bit under the weather. So first of all, Mr. Mayor, thanks to you for stepping in. That was a big help. We're glad to talk to you again so soon after our last program.
You're quite welcome. Glad to help out.
And so we should point out also that Mayor Rozworski is going to take your spot on the 24th of this month. So if you were listening in for Mayor Rozworski on today's show, listen in 2 weeks from now and you'll be able to speak to him. So let me ask you, starting out, I was thinking about the calendar, of course, because we were doing some switching on our calendars today. And since it only happens every 4 years, I don't know that I've ever gotten to ask this of a mayor before. When there is a leap day on a calendar, as there was at the end of last month, so that there's now 366 days in a year, does that change anything about the city? Does it change your budgeting? Do you have to do anything different? Do you add in just a tiny little extra in a budget line item to say, well, we got to keep the lights on February 29th?
No, you know, it really doesn't have that big of an effect. It was just another day for us, and one day in the grand scheme really doesn't throw things off. You know, we have more of a challenge, depending on how the calendar falls, with our pay cycles. This is one of those unique years in which we have our pays divided out for our employees over 27 pays rather than 26, and that causes us some heartburn and some issues to work through, but leap day is not that big of a thing for us.
How does that work, actually, that 27 pay cycle thing? Because I've been in places where I've gotten paid once a month and they've wanted to avoid doing 13 pay cycles in a year instead of 12, one
right.
per month. What kinds of things do you have to work around there?
Well, basically what happens is that, you know, those workers, especially those salary workers, will see their pay divided 27 times instead of 26. So, each paycheck is smaller, but they get an extra paycheck in there. So, it takes some education and some work with employees to understand what's happening. And we just run into that every few years, and we have to deal with it and go on.
Well, I want to move on to other things. This is, of course, the last day, or at least slated to be the last day, of the 2016 legislative session down at the State House. As far as you can tell now, has this session so far had any major impacts on your city, or are you still kind of waiting to see how the other shoe might drop on things like road funding?
Well, as far as I can tell right now, I don't see a major impact, which is good. I think every year we kind of wait and hold our breath to see what's happening, but I don't see anything major, coming out this year. However, they still have a few hours left, so we'll see.
Let's talk about road funding for a second. It is, of course, the big bill that's still up for discussion today. I spoke this morning with our State House reporter, Brandon Smith, who tells me that basically, as far as he understands, they've got a deal done in principle there. There have been talks about whether to dip into state reserves to pay for some of this or whether to, for instance, up the gas and cigarette taxes. Do you have a preference from a municipal point of view of which of those, if you had to pick one or the other, you'd rather see the state do?
Well, it seems to me that there could be some compromise with maybe a little bit of each one of those in the scenario. I've long said that I think our reserves at the state level have been too extensive, that we were going to end up paying the price for that at some point, and we certainly started to see that. So I think they certainly could, take that tax money that's already been collected and taken from the taxpayer and put it to use to better our communities. But, if we have to look at the gas tax, I think we have to look at it because at the end of the day, for the crossroads of America, we have to be able to handle the transportation issues, and our transportation infrastructure has been suffering.
You sound more ready to talk about the gas tax than about the cigarette tax, which people like Luke Kenley in the Senate have said, look, the cigarette tax ends up losing you money over time because what it's designed to do is you increase the tax and it stops people from smoking. And so, of course, there are fewer and fewer people buying cigarettes and the tax amount goes down. Is that your feeling as well?
I don't know that I share that view. I think if you're increasing the tax on there and you're discouraging people from smoking and use goes down, I think overall we're going to save a tremendous amount of money and heartache over the long run.
There's also been a lot of talk about what constitutes long-term road funding, and I would imagine that from your point of view as a mayor, you'd like to know what's coming down the pike, especially as your city and many other cities have discussions about which roads belong to you in terms of upkeep and which roads belong to the state. What, in your view, constitutes a long-term funding deal that would give municipal governments a little bit more knowledge of how the funding is going to play out?
Well, anything would be better than where we're at. I'll start by saying that. I think if we could see out 3, 4, 5 years, that would be very helpful. We're trying to plan our projects, well in advance and be thinking through these things. And when you really don't know, for example, there was a call for funding that came out in the last week. For most people, there was no advance warning to that, and you really don't know when those are going to happen or not going to happen. It makes it very hard to plan and really try to do a thorough job of laying out, some kind of plan that makes sense for the future for your community. So anything would be far better than what we've been doing. But, 3 to 5 years would be great, I would think.
That's an interesting time frame to me, because when I think of long term, you're talking 3 to 5 years. So you're talking a couple of budget cycles from the State House point of view. That would seem to be that's still, to me, seems like it's short term. But you're saying the situation is so untenable now that even a couple of budgets from now is a big help to you?
That would be a big help. Maybe that doesn't fit most people's definition of long-term, but compared to where we've been, that's really looking down the road a lot farther than we've been allowed to look down the road. And I understand it's a little difficult for them as well to get out too far, and accurately predict what they will have available at that point. But we have to have some kind of roadmap to follow.
You just make me realize they should have called this the down-the-road funding bill. That would have been a nice name for it.
Right. There we go. We could suggest that.
That's right. On to other things. One of the other things that's being discussed is a replacement for the I-STEP exam. And I got to looking at the grades for Crawfordsville schools, and they're pretty good. Crawfordsville High School got an A recently. Crawfordsville Middle School got a B. So those grades are pretty solid. And so I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on replacing I-STEP, because it would seem that there's a couple of ways to look at it. Everybody seems to agree at the State House that this is a test and a testing system that's been broken. However, from the point of view of your office, you're looking at schools that are doing pretty well under the old rubric. So where do you come down? Do you want the system to be changed, or do you want to try to keep the grades where they are right now for your city schools?
Well, I think we all agree that there's so many problems with I-STEP as it exists, but I will still stand firm in my belief that there needs to be some kind of standardized testing, and I'm always a little taken back, and I might get myself in trouble here, but I'm always a little taken back by the education community, the education profession, really professing that they should not be evaluated, and I think we all should be evaluated, and I think that's really nothing different. And it should be applied there as well. So I think there needs to be some kind of standardized testing. I was just listening to a story this week of a student who had graduated from a high school in the top 10% of their class and really, really struggled in college. And I don't think that the standards are the same and the thing same that there's not a level playing field out there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So I think there needs to be some kind of standard testing to compare school A, school B, and school C.
So, of course, the I-STEP test right now is taken by students, and you're measuring the student performance on these exams, some of which, of course, comes from how well they've been taught, how well they've maintained their academic rigor, and they've been given the information by the teachers. You're saying you'd like to keep the sort of high-stakes testing that I-STEP has become, even if it's not under the I-STEP brand.
Well, I'm not sure how high the stakes have to be, and I understand there's concerns with, tying performance to pay and all those kind of things. But I think as consumers, as taxpayers paying for the educational system, I think we need to have some objective data that will allow us to really sit down and understand how our school is stacking up and how well we are preparing our students for the next phase in their lives.
You, of course, have talked about your kids from time to time on this program, and they've gone through the school system there. What, from your view as a parent, have you seen and heard about the tests that might inform how the state thinks about changing them? I mean, have your kids come back to you and said, hey, Dad, this is a problem because X, Y, and Z are part of this test?
I think I mainly have heard from my youngest daughter, who's just commented about how rigorous it is and the schedule and the way it's played out and the emphasis that's placed on it and from that perspective. And it was interesting. She had the chance to. It was fun to watch her kind of quiz Tim Brown, Representative Tim Brown, a couple of years ago on this issue, and and really hear her perspective to him about the I-STEP situation. But I don't hear, you know, certainly horror stories from them. They kind of, you know, it's another test, and they deal with it, and they go on. But it certainly is stressful for kids today.
Tell me more about that conversation. I want to know about your daughter getting on the leader of the House Ways and Means Committee about I-STEP.
Well, you know, I think her take was that she just didn't, at the time, feel it was necessary that they were being tested that much, and she didn't understand why it was important, and perhaps their time would be better spent learning new material. So it was kind of an interesting conversation.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Reminder, if you're tuning in for our show with Mayor Tony Rozworski of Lafayette, you can hear that 2 weeks from now. Mayor Rozworski a little bit under the weather today. We'd love to have your phone calls during our next 20 minutes or so. 496-1999 is the number you can call in at. You can also send an email with questions for Mayor Barton. ask@wbaa.org is the email address, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter as well. You and I talked a couple of programs ago about a bill that would change the rules for releasing police body camera footage, which your department has also been examining in various ways. And actually, since we've talked, that bill has changed a little bit, and now it's kind of flip-flopped so that the burden of proof is now on law enforcement to show why that footage should not be released. So it defaults to, under the law, if it goes through and is signed by the governor, it defaults to release to the public unless there is some reason that it should not be, according to law enforcement. How does that flip-flop sit with you and your police chief?
Well, I've not had the conversation directly with the chief. It concerns me to a certain extent, but you know, whatever's you know, implemented, we will go from there and work with it. I've just always insisted that there needs to be some level of protection to prevent, for example, me going in and saying, you know, hey, the police were at my neighbor's last night. I really want to know what was going on in there. I want the footage, and I think there needs to be some kind of protection for all of us at that level. So I think there has to be some kind of standard there that has to be met. Certainly if there's something that's controversial, then obviously we all think that should be made public, and there it is. But I wonder about the day-to-day implications of this if we're not careful.
That has actually been one of the most interesting parts of this discussion for me, because one of the things that's been said is if there is an instance where you could potentially on the video see instances of police brutality or something like that, a lot of people from across the political spectrum have said, yes, we absolutely need to release that video. What do you think is causing that sort of alignment around that issue, at least from a municipal policing perspective?
Well, I think all of our police departments, you know, I mean, they all accept the fact that they're all highly trained. They're all out there, you know, trying to do a very good job. You're going to have an exception here and there. You're going to have a bad apple here and there. And that's unfortunate, but if it exists, let's take care of it, cut it out, and go on and raise the standards. So I don't think anybody's opposed to calling out those bad situations and making sure they're corrected.
On the other hand, the situation you described at the first, which is, hey, there was a police car at my neighbor's house last night, can I see the footage? We should say that people who have not done public records requests before, there is also an instance in state law that says the agency that gives you the public record has a reasonable amount of time, and it's deliberately left vague like that, to decide whether or how to release that to you. So the police department is going to have time to look over the footage themselves before they decide, or before they ask a judge under this law, whether they could keep it secret. But assuming that there is nothing that has to do with some sort of ongoing investigation, or assuming that there's not some sort of criminal proceeding that this is a part of, it seems to me that the situation you described would be one where people would have broad leeway under this new law to say, please, I want to see the footage from my neighbor's house last night, as long as the neighbor wasn't, you know, involved in some sort of international drug ring or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not sure that the legislature has really thought through some of the specifics of those issues.
And so does that pose a problem for police departments on the municipal level? Because now you guys are going to have to figure out how to disseminate this. You're going to have to find the man hours to be able to do that. Or you might have to buy some electronic infrastructure to make that easier for people. I guess what it comes down to is this broad writing of the bill problematic, maybe even just from a budgetary perspective.
It is problematic, and it probably will have a financial impact on cities and police departments. There's no doubt about it. You're exactly right. You will have to spend time working through this issue. You will have to spend time making copies. You have to spend time doing those things that quite frankly, you know, aren't in our normal operations. So it will have an impact, and it's just unfortunate. It's another situation that I just think that, you know, in this case, the legislature looks at this issue and doesn't really try to dive in and really think about it from the day-to-day perspective and the implications it's going to have.
One more bill I wanted to ask you about that hasn't gotten a lot of coverage, but I thought it was interesting because of your previous career as a fireman and a paramedic, and it requires the state to set some more rules regarding ignition interlock devices, which are these things that you can put in cars that give the driver a breathalyzer test before a car can be started. And I'm assuming that you have been to a number of accident scenes in your life. Do you think the state should require these sorts of devices of more drivers, or indeed monitor people who have them more closely, which is kind of what the bill is designed to do, so that the incidence of drunk driving would be theoretically reduced because you're paying more attention to these people? Or the other side of that I can see is it looks like Big Brother is watching people who might have had one DUI infraction somewhere along the line. How do you come down on that?
Well, I think there needs to be some kind of measurement in there, and I'm not sure, you know, the first-time offender, that how far we want to take this, you know. But certainly, I, as you said, I've seen plenty of tragedy in my career from the effects of people operating while intoxicated. So I'm in favor of any step that's out there that will help reduce that. If it reduces it and saves one life, you know, or especially those innocent people who get caught up in this, it would be well worth it. But, you know, again, I think you have to step back and think about the day-to-day implications of something like this. And the reality is that you can put these devices on their vehicle, and if they really want to drive, they'll climb into a different vehicle and drive away. So you kind of have to weigh that out, the risk versus the benefit.
We've got just about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA, and we'd love to have your questions for him. Call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, I noticed, and we've been covering a little bit the discussion in the Kokomo City Council over the last couple of weeks. They're currently discussing an LGBT rights ordinance, and this is something we talked about on our program last month with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. There are about a dozen other cities that already have one of these ordinances. What is the discussion like in your city?
You know, it's come up a few times. We've had some discussion, and it's most likely something that will, I think, be discussed further as we move through the summer this year. I'm not hearing a lot about the issue, to be honest, but I do get inquiries from time to time, and it is something that I've had discussions with council members about, and they know that they probably need to look at this issue in the coming months, and we need to make some decisions.
What do you think is the opinion of your council? Is this something that they could see moving forward on if there was enough public outcry?
I see, you know, our council is pretty proactive, and I think there's a sentiment to move forward if they feel that it's something that the community, you know, really wants to see. So, I, again, it's one of those situations where I don't think they are getting, you know, input from the community on this issue, so it's not really high on their list right now.
So it seems to me that this issue has gone a couple of different ways as it's been enacted across the Indiana cities that have it. You can have, like, what's going on in Kokomo, where you've got a mayor leading, and Mayor Goodnight used part of his State of the City address this year to say, hey, we really want to pass this ordinance, and if it comes to my desk, I'll sign it. And on the other hand, you have communities, and this, I think, is similar to what's going on in Frankfort, where you've got people beginning to address their public officials to say, we'd really like to have one of these ordinances. So now I'm going to ask you a sort of tough question here. Is this an issue you would be willing to try to lead on in the way that Mayor Goodnight has?
It's very possible. You know, I've made that clear to the council people that I think we need to be a community that welcomes everyone, that treats everyone the same, that doesn't discriminate against anyone based on any particular issue. So, you know, I, again, I'm weighing it out, but there is a strong possibility that I will take the lead on it. And I can tell you today that if it's, you know, if the council did pass that, I would sign it. I think, you know, certainly there are concerns among different, you know, segments of the community with something like that. But I will not sign anything that, you know, creates some kind of reverse discrimination type of effect. I don't believe in that. But if it's something that simply grants the same protections to every class as, you know, across the board, then I'm okay with that.
So I mentioned last month's conversation that we had with Mayor McBarnes, and we had a young woman who called in during the show, and she said that she had heard the mayor talk about how he, like you, wanted to attract young professionals to the community, and this is something we hear from a number of mayors and something you and I have talked about with respect to what you're doing with Stellar and things like that. And she said, you know, if you want to attract young professionals, why don't you think about writing an LGBT rights ordinance? I think that's something, she says, that would attract young professionals. Do you see that the same way in Crawfordsville?
Well, it definitely could be, I think it'd be a factor in attracting young professionals. I think they're, from what I'm seeing, the view on this issue certainly looks different from the younger person's perspective than it does maybe the older person's perspective, and younger people tend to be on the side of, look, we should treat everyone the same, and we should grant these protections across the board. So I think that would be appealing to young people, and I think that could be one piece of the overall puzzle here, yes.
So when we were doing our program with Mayor McBarnes, it caused me at that point, actually during the program, to look up how many cities have this. And it's still fewer than 20 in Indiana. And so it seems to me that if you're one of the cities that's enacting it now, as Kokomo is trying to do, it would be something that you could sell yourself on, because it does set you apart from the vast majority of municipalities in the state. As you are trying to do exactly that with all the new stuff you're adding with Stellar, wouldn't this be something that you could stick on a billboard, a pamphlet, a website, something like that, to say, we are welcoming to everybody, and by the way, look at all the brand spanking new amenities we have, too?
Yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, there's no denying that, you know, and we saw the backlash in Indiana with the tourism piece, and tourism's very important to us, and to know that we welcome everybody into our community is important. And really, a side effect of tourism was we hope that some of those people say, you know, this is a pretty nice place. I wouldn't mind living here. So you could absolutely use that as a tool. There's no doubt about it.
I wanted to talk with you also about something that I spent some time on with Mayor Dennis on our program last week, which is there's been a push around here by the League of Women Voters of Greater Lafayette to ask public officials, and they went to both city councils and to the county commissioners to say, you guys, we believe, need to pass a resolution that affords us the ability to say Tippecanoe County is in favor of a nonpartisan redistricting commission that would redraw all of the future boundaries for legislative districts, for the state house, the state senate, the 9 congressional districts. And they got that resolution passed by multiple lawmaking bodies around here. Where do you come down on that? Is that something you would like to see happen and something you think you could get support for in your city, in your county?
Well, we've not been approached directly on that issue. You know, I think that's something that we probably would have support for here. And I will point to the fact that, you know, we had to redraw the lines for our council districts within the city within the last few years. And I know our local chapter, the League of Women Voters, has touted statewide that once we did that, I mean, our margins were so tight. It was one of the best that they had seen, in the fact that we really drew those to get those equal on population, so that everybody's vote was as close, you know, to the same as possible. So we've worked very, very well, I think, in our community to approach that, at least from a bipartisan perspective, and if I don't know if you want to call it nonpartisan, but we've certainly tried to take everything into consideration there and not really draw those based on, you know, a situation that would create an advantage for one group over another. So I think we would definitely be open to it, and I sense that from the council as well.
Well, now you've hit on an interesting thing that I spent some time on with Mayor Dennis last week, because he said exactly the same thing. He says he favors bipartisan redistricting rather than nonpartisan redistricting, even though he acknowledges that gerrymandering exists in the way lines are drawn now, and he exists that there are more parties than just the Republican and the Democratic Party who might want to have some sort of voice in these elections. So my question to you is, if the two parties that currently share the vast majority of the power, not just in this state, but almost everywhere in the country, given the chance, have an impetus to draw those lines, do they have any sort of impetus to do anything that favors anything other than the Republican and the Democratic Party. I mean, shouldn't it be nonpartisan to take as much of the politics out and let those elections be as inconsiderate of the parties as possible?
Right. No, I think that's a good point, and I think that's something that would have to be evaluated, and you know, precisely why I said not really sure. You know, in our community, it was a bipartisan approach, but I think maybe a nonpartisan is something you have to look at. The devil's in the details and how you create a nonpartisan system. That sounds a lot easier than it probably is in reality, because anyone you put on any kind of group like that has some kind of partisan beliefs or some kind of political ideology in their mind at some point. So it's pretty difficult sometimes to create something that's really objective, and I hate to say that, but that's what it comes down to. But I don't think we want to create a situation that excludes, you know, any of the other minor parties per se. We just want to a situation in which everybody's vote counts equally, and these aren't drawn in a way that's so skewed.
Sure, that's a fair point. And the same thing is true of journalists as well. You know, any journalist who tells you they're completely objective is lying to you. So
right.
I certainly see that point. One more quick thing that came across my email. We talked a few months ago about you guys trying to be part of a regional cities plan that eventually kind of fell apart between you guys and Greater Lafayette and things like that. And regional cities is one thing that's also being discussed at the State House. There's no plan going forward to find more money for that, although lawmakers say it's something they would like to do. Do you think that is something that you'd like to see happen again, just to have another shot at applying for that money since you didn't take the shot this time around?
Well, for us, it didn't really fit. We were trying to really focus on the initiative within our own community at the time and trying to get our own house in order before we looked at a much bigger picture. I think it's a good concept for the state to try to fund and try to follow. If we can really develop these regions, it will benefit everyone. And we're working right now with the Greater Lafayette area and, you know, on some issues that are being addressed by the Lilly group. And so we're kind of working through some of those. And I think that's kind of laying the groundwork, kind of building the foundation for maybe a run at this later if it exists. We're far from it right now, but I think we're headed on the right path.
You talked a little bit about how communication was not as good as you would have liked it leading up to the deadline to apply for this year's Regional Cities Awards. How has that communication changed in the several months in the interim? Has it gotten better between folks in Montgomery County and folks in Tippecanoe County?
I don't think it's really changed since then. But like I said, I think we are laying the foundation. Primarily the groups that are working through the Lilly side of this, that are kind of trying to create those pathways. And so, you know, I'm confident it will get better, but I'm not going to say that it's there yet.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you again for pinch hitting for Mayor Rozworski today. We really appreciate it. Nice to talk to you. And
we'll
look forward to doing it again next month.
Great. Have a great day.
Thanks. Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that all these programs are archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. Just look for the Ask the Mayor page. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.